The man who used to be Paul Wilson and still is. Welcome to The Message.
Hi, John. Good to be here.
Yeah, no, Paul, no, you've met Aisha, our producer.
I have. And I asked her a question. I was very impressed. I asked her what year The Spectator was born, and she knew the answer, even though she's only been here less than 12 months. So we should be going out in the newsroom and asking others and see how they measure up.
I bet, you know, maybe 50% would be my prediction, I would say.
Right.
So, well, it's great to have you here. I want to talk to you a bit about the city and writing and loves found and lost and just what the heck double churn margarine is.
Yes.
So we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But first, it's great to have in the newsroom. And as readers know, you write regularly for the Spec, but you're no longer based here in the fortress on Fridge Street, as you've called it.
Right. Alliteration is a wonderful thing.
I'll try to use it in moderation. We were talking. It's been a while since you've been in the building, right?
It's been 5 years.
Yeah.
And that's partly intentional. I'm sure I could have talked my way in here since then. But, I have certain memories of the way this place was. I came to this newsroom in 1981, and it was a different kind of place then and different people. And so you hold on to that. But walking through here today was not an unpleasant experience at all. I like lots of people here that I like them.
Yeah, and of course it caused quite a stir when Paul walked through. He's sort of a living legend around here, it would not be overstating it to say that Paul Wilson is perhaps the most revered storyteller in the history of the Spectator since, well, he wasn't around in 1846, but you did not start your career here. A couple of weeks ago, you wrote a piece in the paper marking 40 years of bylines in newspapers.
That's right.
From the first in the pages of the Midland Free Press up on Georgian Bay to the present. And you noted that Midland was a two-newspaper town back then.
It was. Two papers, each coming out on Wednesday and Friday, and you know, we covered that town really well. That town was well served.
Yeah. Before I came to the Spec, I was in Guelph and wrote for the weekly paper there, the Tribune, and that was a two newspaper town. The Trib is the weekly, and the Mercury.
Yeah.
And the Merc is no longer, which is a shame.
Yeah. So there you have a town. What's Guelph, about 150,000 or so?
Yeah, at least now. Yeah.
Yeah. With no daily newspaper. Midland much smaller than that, but still to have, and I don't think I'm pretty sure that Midland does not have a weekly of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
Online, yes, but I think it's based in Barrie. So, to my mind, that's a loss in any town that happens.
Mm-hmm. Your pitch to the editor of the Spectator to hire you back in the day. You were working at the time at the Niagara Falls Review,
right?
And you sent them a feature that you had written on gambling. And you also mailed along five sets of dice.
That was a piece that I was doing a little stringing for the Globe and Mail from the Review.
Oh, okay.
You had to kind of supplement your salary.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And so I did a few things for them, and one of them was casino gambling across the border in Niagara Falls. So, yes, I did that. I bought five sets of dice. I made five boxes up. Didn't just put them in the mail. I perlated them.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So courier. They all arrived at the same time. A little fanfare, yes. And a guy bringing it up. And I think that was maybe a little leftover from, I had worked in advertising for a while, just trying to make an impression.
And yes.
Yeah. I did it. I confess. One of the editors didn't like that approach at all.
No, but the other one did.
Well, five of them. So I think four liked it and one did not.
Right.
Yes.
And the note you attached to that, I remember writing about this when I wrote about you, was that you put, it's no gamble to hire Paul Wilson.
I think it was something like this. It was probably something as cheesy as that.
And yet here you are. You mentioned marketing. And so, so before I move too far off my T's off the top with the double churn margarine,
right?
You worked for a marketing company for a short time before you found your calling.
It was an advertising agency.
An advertising agency.
Spitzer Mills and Bates. They were one of the biggies. They were on Bay Street in Toronto, the big clients. And so the double churned, I believe it was either for Blue Bonnet margarine or Fleshman's Corn Oil margarine.
Right.
And double churned was to provide the dairy connotation. But you couldn't say that it tastes like butter back then, or if it's like butter. But churning had that connotation, and the double churned was that they inserted a chemical into the the mix of vegetable oil and salt and so on, called, I think it was called Firmenich, could be wrong. And so they stirred it in with a blade, then they stopped and turned the blade around the other way, and that's your double.
That's
shirt.
The double. Yes. That was the secret.
Yeah, somebody got a raise for that one. It wasn't me.
I mean, there's some crossover, you know, with marketing and journalism. I mean, having to do a little research and spin the story, right?
Absolutely. You know? It is true.
I want to ask you a bit before I talk a bit about writing with you, which I could talk about all day with you, but we don't have all that long. Aisha will give us the hook. But I want to ask you a bit about the city in general terms. You know, you have seen so many faces of Hamilton over the years and written about all of them or many of them, and you still do. And you recently wrote about the airport out in the fields of Mount Hope, which is a subject you've touched on many times before. And
actually, before I started Street Beat, I was mostly General Simon, but I had a subbeat of the airport.
That was what you covered, was the airport.
Yeah, and it's one I kind of asked for, I think, because I was always interested in that little, you know, that was the biggest gift we were ever given by the federal government back then under the John Monroe regime. And it really, you know, the year it opened, Canada's Auditor General branded it the biggest white elephant in Canada. But so all these years we're struggling to make that airport go. Yeah. And we gain some ground, and then then it slips back. Right now things are humming along nicely.
Seems to be hopping quite well.
That's because it's sure a nice place to fly out of.
Yeah, I love it. And it's an example of a story that when I or any of the reporters do a piece on, say, the airport or Barton Street or whatever it might be, we go back through the Spectator archives to find stories written about them, and oftentimes it's something that you've written. I think it's a neat way the kind of history is passed down to the generations of reporters.
Yeah.
And of course, you've written about Barton Street East a lot.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this new craft beer bar opening on Barton? I just saw this yesterday, called Mosaic. Mosaic. It's opening Thursday.
I think maybe so. It's on the north side of the street.
I'm not sure exactly.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that name in a window, but actually, I didn't realize it was going to be a craft brewery.
Apparently, that's what. I don't know if they're brewing there or just selling, but.
So if it's a place I'm thinking of, it's not too. You know, there's one section. Barton is a big long street.
Yes, yeah. And they're trying it's not too far from Wentworth, I think.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But they're trying to bring it back in chunks, and the first chunk is that chunk from, let's say, the hospital east to, Wentworth, and further on. But I think that's where that is, and may it help. It took a long time for Barton Street to fall. It'll take a long time for it to come back. But, man, I do love walking along there. There's no street like it in Canada, I don't think, really.
You know, the city has come a long way, certainly. You know, what we think was the core, the downtown, it's come back a long way in the last couple of decades. Did you really think back in the day when you were writing about the downtown, writing about James Street North and the reverend who did hair coloring and exorcisms on the side?
Reverend Ron.
Did you ever think back then that the downtown, Hamilton, would sort of come back the way it has?
I'm not sure that I did, because I had not. I missed the glory days of downtown. I didn't come to Hamilton until the early 80s.
It was in rough shape then, right?
It was in rough shape then. And so I had, I certainly had talked to people who said, oh, here's how it used to be. When I was here, we still did have, Eaton's was still here. Mm. When the old Eaton's was taken down and they built the new Eaton Center, wow, suddenly there was some stuff happening, but all in that one complex, right?
Right.
And that went so badly, so fast. A complex that cost $77 million, 10 years later sold for something like $3 million.
Wow.
So we were still mired in trouble then. So asking me the question, I didn't predict that it would be the way it is. It's... There's still lots of work to do there, but James North is just a delight to walk along.
Do you miss, as someone who's walked that street so many times? I mean, I guess there's a certain character to it when it was down and out, and there's character to it now. What do you prefer, the old or the new?
No, I'll take this one.
Yeah.
I'll take this one, and I have fun when people are in town. We go walking on that street telling them what used to be here.
Right. Yeah.
So it's I'll take it the way it is, but still lots to go downtown. Right. You go
yes.
on King East yeah. Downtown. It's lots of challenges there, but you know you have the Royal Connaught. Mm-hmm. Did I think the Royal Connaught? Sure. Whatever. You know, it was empty for 10 years.
A lot of false starts on that.
Yeah, they were using that crumbling lobby to film scenes for the Hulk, I believe.
Right, that's yeah. right. Yeah, I forgot about
that. Would that ever come? Cool. No.
Yeah.
And the job they did on that, right? And just this past week I wrote about, this is a parking lot that I've been watching for 30 years.
That's right.
Right. I've been watching. I walk past there all the time.
Yeah.
Always thinking, how can that be sitting there in the middle of the city, stuff going on all around, and now it's been purchased for $20 million, and big outfits on life, and they will do things on there. So
mm-hmm.
it's for years they would say, oh, Hamilton's on the cusp, things are coming. Well, it's beyond that now.
Longtime readers know that at the Spec, for more than 20 years, you wrote a column called Street Beat. It became synonymous with you. We had an editor, former editor, who used to just call you Street Beat.
We did. Gentleman Jim.
Jim Pullen would come in. When you stepped away from that job at the Spectator, as when you basically retired Street Beat, just over 8 years ago.
That's right. I left, took a package in early 2011.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I wrote a farewell piece that was headlined Goodnight Street Beat.
Yeah.
And you joked in that story that you were about to become the guy who used to be Paul Wilson,
right.
Which is where I got the title for this podcast. When I look back at the piece I wrote, it really was this ode to a writer who I admired from that first day I came to work in the newsroom 22 years ago.
We sat about 6 inches from each other.
That's
yeah.
right, over by the lone window.
The north end of the newsroom.
In the newsroom. And
I knew right away you were going places, pal. Yeah. I knew there'd be NNAs right up to the ceiling. And yeah.
I'm going to have you back on the show. So.
Yeah.
And at the time, you had just published your book.
You have a book, that copy in your hand, it looks awfully crisp. It looks as though it's never been read.
I've read
it. It looks factory fresh there, Phil.
I've treated it well. And the inscription inside the book that you wrote to me when I bought the book
okay.
is, to John, luckiest man in the newsroom, sitting close to Paul Wilson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And an H of a good guy. Because there's no H in John.
There's no H in John.
So October 30th, 1997.
What year did you come here, by the way?
So 97.
It was not H.
April 97.
Yeah, yeah. Because do you remember when you said, yeah, like, buy one of your books?
Yes.
I autographed one for you.
Yeah.
Didn't know you that well at that point. It was
no,
you were new to
town. That's right.
I put an H in your name, John.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot.
And then I realized that. John, give me that book back. He said, no, that's okay. I mean, that just speaks to the guy. You know, he said, no, that's okay.
Yeah.
I said, no, it's not okay. And give me the book back. And so I...
So you gave me a whole other book?
I took the other book back.
Yeah,
yes.
Because this one says to John,
yes.
And there's no
so
way to
it's
the John.
It's a shelf copy at home.
Wow.
I read it to the kids at home. And
your memory is amazing.
Yeah. No, well, that was... Partly is your reaction.
That's fantastic. Yeah. You know, I know I've tried to over the years, either subconsciously and consciously, emulate some Street Beat-ish touches in my pieces. I think we all have. Mm-hmm. Who were your influences as a writer when you were finding your voice? Would you say long ago, or did you have any that you think of?
You know, I didn't go to journalism school, so it
right.
wasn't a case of studying other people's work there. I think I mentioned that I kind of ended up in the field by default.
Mm-hmm.
People said, oh, you write good letters.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
Back home.
But one guy that I really did, I liked some of the Chicago stuff that's going on, like Bob Green.
Right.
Bob Green, who kind of, he went down in flames
yes.
at the end.
He did some personal issues. But
yeah, he had some personal
but
issues.
But he's a heck of a writer.
But by God, that guy could, he told a story so simply and concisely,
mm-hmm.
too, right?
Yes.
He wrote as he spoke.
Mm-hmm.
I just, so if I tried to emulate anybody, his personal stuff aside,
right.
it would be him. And then there were other guys from that era too, like Mike Royko.
Chicago as well. Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So that school of try not to have too many $25 words in there. And yeah. The book I like best is On Writing Well by William Zinsser, I think it is.
That's right, yes.
And I know Paul Burton has mentioned that piece in one of his columns,
yes,
too. And he really, for anybody who wants to maybe buff up their writing a little bit, mm-hmm. read that one.
I remember you saying years ago, and I think about it sometimes when I'm writing, that you talk about your goal, basically, when you're writing one of your pieces, one of your columns, was to get them to move on to the next line.
And you have to, don't
paragraph
you?
To paragraph. But what can you do to get them to want to move forward in the piece, right?
Right, because so many distractions, whether you're reading it in print or whether you're reading it online, mm-hmm. In print, there are all other places on the page they can go.
Yep.
And online, the world's out there.
Yeah.
So, you have to pull them from one sentence to the next. Sometimes you succeed, but not always.
And that's, nowadays, they talk, the editors talk, the big catch word is engagement. Engagement time online. They measure this.
Yeah.
How long are people spending, uh-huh. not just clicking from story to story, but staying with the story.
Right.
How many minutes can you keep them locked in?
Right.
Online.
And in the kind of writing you do, I mean, that's a real challenge.
When it's a long piece.
You're writing long form.
Yeah.
I read every word of Arkell's, but I had to block out a little time to do it. I had to get by the fireplace. I had to get a glass of wine. And that was a really interesting piece. But how many words did that run?
That was about 9,000 words.
Whoa. Yeah. So I haven't written that many in 30 years.
I don't like feeling like I'm getting caught up in all that stuff, but the engagement time for that was high.
What would the engagement?
Well,
be?
So
to read that,
I think it's like an average in terms of what they produce.
Of course. Yeah.
So the typical story is a minute or less online, and mine was a 6-minute average, which is very high.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that suggested people were sticking with it in one way or another, which is good to see. But that's as you say, with a piece like that.
You took way more than 6 minutes of my life. I'm not sure how long it took, but it's a good piece. And so that tells you that there's room for both. I write, so you wrote 9,000, I write 650.
Right, yeah. But the principles are the same in terms of that building the momentum in the piece.
Yeah, they are.
And I want to talk about one of those pieces just in a second. Yeah. You've written so much about joy and the flip side, the pain, over the years. Certainly your column, I just mentioned in passing because I don't want the listeners to start weeping, but a column about your dog Bambi that you had to drive to the vet to put down is a classic example.
Haven't had the courage to get another dog since.
I really wish that she was the last.
It's the last. We haven't had one since.
More recently, you wrote this, I think, an exquisite piece this past Valentine's Day. You led with a woman who lives in Dundas, Marguerite Babcock.
Right.
Correct.
That's right, yeah.
And I just thought it was classic from that standpoint, that you lead with Marguerite and write about how she had resisted finding love for the longest time.
She had, yeah.
And then she, despite herself, she found true love.
Yeah.
But then she lost the love she found this man to Alzheimer's.
Yeah, that's right.
So my first question about that, your writing has always been tremendous, but it's always born of your reporting. How did you even find Marguerite?
So actually, a year prior to when I went to speak to her, she sent me an email, and I had written something about this little club called Losers in Love for the Valentine's before.
Right.
And it was more of a light-hearted piece. It was four or five people, men and women, who had... Their relationships had ended, and they got together each Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. And so Marguerite had sent me a note just after that and said, I'm not a loser in love, but boy, after so many things going right in my life, now they haven't been so much.
Right.
I thanked her for her note, and I said, I might be back in touch with you sometime. So I am good at keeping stuff in little tickler files, right?
Yeah.
And I put at the time, this might be a good one for Valentine's Day. So it started with an email from her.
So when Valentine's Day came around, you went back through your files to kind of see what you might have.
Right. And And so I got back in touch with her and said, would you be okay with me coming over to talk?
Yeah, and you know, so you end this piece. I mean, you lead with her finding this love, and then at the end, you quote Marguerite saying, you read about great loves. I didn't believe it until I met Paul, was the name
right.
of her.
Yeah. Yeah.
He made me want to be a better person. I wish I met him sooner.
Yeah.
And then you continue. She has not changed the words that Paul recorded for their phone's voicemail long ago. It's going to sound stupid, she says, but sometimes I call here, her own place,
right.
just to hear him say, Marguerite and Paul, leave a message. It's the only way I can hear his voice. Marguerite knows she must move on, but there's no harm in a quick call home this Valentine's Day.
Right. You
know, boom. I mean, that's a great ending.
Yeah, thanks. And that is the case. It's the same with her email. Her email address still has both their names in it.
And
as you say, part of it, too, was the fact that for so long she had avoided a relationship like that for decades.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
That's putting yourself out there, but then you get that flip side of the... Of the joy. You know, you wrote in your last piece about how you continue to clip your articles, and you said, you know, after 40 years, you can't seem to stop. What about with writing? You can't seem to stop that either, I suppose.
No, that's not true. So when I left the Spec 8 years ago, mm-hmm. it was, I had no plans to
do any writing.
I was just coming up on 60 and healthy and glad to have that. So I ended up doing work with CBC for about a year and a half.
That's right.
And then when that contract was over, I was pretty much ready to go back to Plan A again, which was nothing structured anyway.
Yeah.
And then it was, Jim Poling contacted me at the Spec, I think. Maybe Dan Nolan had been talking to him or something. Hey, you should hire Wilson back again.
That's what Dan would do that.
Dan would. And so anyway, I said, okay. And the basis has been, it was then, it is now, that the Spec can stop it at any time or I can stop it at any mm-hmm. time. And I thought I might do it for 2 or 3 years, but now it's been 5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm sure you do reach a point where probably it's enough to... let somebody else fill up that space. But, you know, I had even, like, the end of this past year, I was thinking, maybe it's time now. Because it's a little limiting in terms of Martin and I do like to travel, and you have to keep it to a couple of weeks, really.
Right.
So I was thinking, maybe the end of the year. And then just before the end of the year, I ended up talking to a family that runs a pizzeria downtown. It's kind of in ground zero there, and the stuff that they've had to endure in terms of vandalism and racism and everything else, and yet you go into their shop and it's bright and it's clean
mm-hmm.
and they are happy, and they I'm talking to the guy, and he was 68 years old. He said, I'm not retired, I'm coming here. That was kind of an inspirational way to spend an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Would I rather be sitting home that afternoon, or would I like to be talking to this guy and then writing about it? So,
mm-hmm, yeah.
So okay, well, let's keep going for a while longer.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, one day, yeah. Not sure when.
I'm not sure how to pose the question or if I understand what the question is, but, you know, as you know, your family is all grown up. Mine is two, or at least getting there.
Mine are in their 30s.
You're in your 30s.
Yours aren't there yet.
Not quite. You know, life moves on quickly, and you've written all the time about life and loss and all these sort of things.
Absolutely.
Do you sometimes?
I know your question before you finished it. I think. Do I think about that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as a writer, who that's what you do is you put the narratives together.
Absolutely. And I think about that more frequently.
Yeah.
Because I'm just coming up 68 this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Like just this past week, I learned of the death of a guy that I knew. He was just a dynamo of a guy. He ended up in BC. He was a lawyer. He ended up mayor of his town, and just as vibrant a guy. And so he died. He died mm-hmm. of cancer. He's about my age.
Right.
And you hear that more and more as you're my age now.
Yes.
And some of the colleagues that I left when I left the Spectator in 2011, some of them have died.
They have, yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
So you do think about that, and you do think about what should I be doing today? Because tomorrow you don't know whether you're Yeah, so the answer is yes, absolutely. I think about that, and how could you not?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried writing fiction? Ever thought about that?
No, I have not. Maybe I just haven't had the courage. Somehow I feel that I wouldn't be good at it, but I have not tried it. To me, I enjoy telling people's stories, the people and the places of of the city. There's enough to mine right there for me.
And you've done a lot of traveling with Marnie, your wife, you mentioned.
Yeah.
Is there a place left that's on the list, or have you covered off pretty much the places you had?
No, we haven't. In fact, we're about to head off to Memphis and Nashville. And now I've been to Memphis.
Yes, you have. Big Elvis guy.
It was with two guys in the back seat of a Plymouth Accord, was it Reliant or something? Anyway, they were real fans, and they knew what Elvis's dog tag number was and when he was in the Army. So Marnie has not seen Memphis.
I see.
I have not been to Nashville. But, there are lots of places yet to see. And at this stage of the game, that is what gives you the most pleasure, the experiences. Mm-hmm. Not the bigger TV, the chance to see a place. You know, we've gone to Guatemala and Belize and Costa Rica and wandered all over England and Paris. Marnie loves Paris. Yeah. That's, you know, that was part of the reason, too, taking the... You got to do that stuff while you can.
Right, right.
You know, before you've got a bad knee or while you still have the energy, right? Fingers crossed that we can do some more of that.
And all these places, I know you do research beforehand.
Right? Oh, yeah, I love that.
You build up all that, and then so that when you get there, you know what you want to see. And
I'm feeling a little anxious because I haven't done enough research on Memphis and Nashville yet, even though I've been there. So when I leave here today, I'll be in there tapping away on. It just brings more to the trip.
Kind of preparing your story in advance.
Yes, it is.
It occurs to me.
By the way, actually, you have prepped nicely here too, John. You
got lots of paper.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, and I wish we could get to more of it. Your a favorite topic of mine.
We probably given the people enough here.
And I appreciate you coming by. And
hey, thanks for asking me, John. Really.
Some other time, hopefully.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, and thanks to Aisha as always. And we will talk to you again on The Message.